Welcome back to the program. We are at that point of the year in which we often take stock of our lives and set goals for the future. What are the mistakes, though, that we make in setting those goals? Are they too hard? Are they too easy? Are they realistic? Are they fantasy? We're going to talk about all of that today in the context of success and achievement with my guest, Mark Murphy. He is a founder and CEO of Leadership IQ, a provider of leadership training for major companies like Microsoft, IBM, Merck, and other companies. He's the author of a new book entitled Hard Goals, The Science of Extraordinary Achievement. Mark Murphy, thanks so much for joining us.
Jeff, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. What is the biggest mistake that people make in setting goals for themselves?
It's interesting. The single biggest mistake they make is they don't set goals that activate their brain. They sort of whip them off, you know, and that's the thing that happens with New Year's resolutions, for example. We say, that seems like an okay thing to do. We'll do it. Everybody else is doing it. But we don't sink them into our brain. And what we found over and over again was that many people set goals that are too easy. They're too achievable. They're too little bite-sized chunks sitting in front of them. It's the big goals. It's the goals that kind of wake us up, that get us excited. Those are the ones we tend to put 100% effort in, and those are the ones we achieve.
Is part of the reason why people don't look for those goals, have the vision for those goals, is a sense that they're not achievable, perhaps, and they'll get disappointed in the process?
Absolutely. In fact, for 50, 60 years now, we've taught goal-setting methodologies to folks in businesses and at home, and we teach people you've got to have SMART goals. They have to be specific and measurable and achievable and realistic, and it's those things that we dial people back, and we say, listen, don't go after the big thing. You'll get hurt. It's a little bit scary, and yet the great irony is if you sit down and you ask yourself, what's the greatest achievement I've ever had in my life? It could be anything, nursing a child back to health. It could be running a marathon, losing 20 pounds, getting the promotion, whatever the thing is. I guarantee you were emotionally connected to it. You could visualize it. You felt a sense of urgency, and it was difficult. It wasn't easy. It was hard. It was a little bit scary. Pushed us out of our comfort zones, but that is the thing that drives the pride, the great achievements. It's that stuff throughout our life that's going to give us that sense of fulfillment. And we have historically told people, don't do the things that are going to make you feel amazing. Don't do the things that are going to drive great success. Yeah, don't go man on the moon. That's too hard. You know, greatest generation stuff. Nah, don't do that. And the irony is, it's our great feelings, our great pride, satisfaction, et cetera, comes from the difficult goals.
How did we get to the point where we began to look at goal setting, whether it's in a business context or an interpersonal context, in terms of these small bite-sized chunks that are sort of easily achievable to make us feel good but don't really give you that big sense of success you're talking about?
Well, we started on this path where we wanted people to feel great, and efficiency nuts that we are, we wanted to find the fastest way to that great feeling. So there was a movement out there that realized that, you know what, depending on how you measure happiness, if you measure happiness in like 15-minute increments of how you feeling right now, how you feeling right now, how you feeling right now, which, by the way, is how a lot of quote-unquote researchers are measuring happiness these days. If you measure it that way, the easiest way to get to that kind of happiness is just to do things that you're already good at. Don't do things that are too hard. Stay indoors. Watch the TV. Eat the bonbons. You know, don't step out of your comfort zone, because that, in the 15-minute increment happiness, that will make you happier. The problem is that's not a deep happiness. That's a pretty superficial happiness, and that's what got lost somewhere in the past 10, 20 years.
And it also goes to the heart of a lot of other things that are wrong, not to turn it into too big an issue, but a lot of other things that are wrong with our society from a political, from a business, from a personal standpoint, is that we think only in short term as opposed to a long-term vision.
Exactly. And you see this play out, because goal setting is one of those things that goals are not just the things we do to shed 10 pounds every year. Goals are the things that drive society. Goals are the things that, whether we're talking global warming or we're talking, shed 5 pounds of holiday weight, it's still goals. And that core philosophy that we bring to it, the core orientation, yeah, you know what? If we want to avoid short-term pain, don't lose the 5 pounds. Sit on the couch, eat the bonbons, don't tackle the big issues, don't tackle global warming, don't deal with the recession, don't deal with any of that. The problem is that when you look at the overall life satisfaction of, say, the under 40 generation today versus the over 70, our greatest generation, their life fulfillment, they didn't come out worse for the wear, for the sacrifices they made, for the big challenges, for the difficult goals they attained. In fact, if anything, the opposite is true. They're the ones who sit back and say, you know what, at least I go off into the next stage of things knowing that I did something meaningful with my life. I did everything I could do. I maximized my potential. Whereas today we kind of sit around and there is a general sort of malaise that takes place and angst that, what am I doing with my life? I mean, I've got my short-term gratification, but am I getting anywhere? Is this meaning anything? And that's the one of the major problems we have right now. This goal-setting thing is a pretty universal issue.
How do we get to the point where we can define what is meaningful for us in setting those goals?
You know, one of the easiest places to start is to take a look back in our lives. Generally, we found that most people have a moment in their life where they can point to and say, you know, maybe this isn't the thing I'm best at. Maybe this is not the thing that, you know, I'm going to put on my tombstone, but this is something that kind of defined me. When I look at my life and the things I've done, this is something I feel pretty darn good about. It may not be sexy to everybody else, but it's something that stands out. You know, I think in my life there are issues with my kids. There's also, I ran a marathon, and I'm not a runner. I have pretty much zero natural running ability, and I ran it really slowly, about an hour slower than my wife. And yet, when I look at this, it sort of became a defining moment. And it was one of those things, yeah, it doesn't go in my bio, to be sure. But it's one of those things that says, yeah, you know what, that I feel pretty darn good about that. Didn't think I could do, well out of my comfort zone. This is something that, I liked that kind of a challenge. And as we go back and we dissect our own lives, we say, that was a moment we hit something meaningful. I had a real emotional connection to that. Why? What was it about that thing that jumped out for me? In my case, it happened to be that I liked knowing that I could overcome whatever the pain was. And so when I boil it down and I say, well, what does that say about me? What does that say about my character? You know, if I understand that, now my next challenge is to go find more things like that. Once I understand what I did and why I emotionally felt the way I felt about it, I can go find other situations that mimic that sensation. It doesn't have to be the exact same thing anymore. I just have to go find things that emotionally mimic that sensation I've had before in my life.
And the other part of it that you point out is not just the emotional component, but the mental component, the fact that of the need to visualize what it is you're struggling to achieve.
It's a huge finding, and neurologists have really done all the hard work on this, that when you think about how the brain processes information, we have more sort of neurological real estate devoted to our visual sense than we do to pondering abstract numbers, for example. People say, well, I'm going to lose 10 pounds. Well, okay, great, but that's a number. Numbers don't really sear into our neural pathways in the same way that a picture does. If you drew a picture of yourself, for example, fitting into those skinny jeans, or you bought a picture, you cut out a picture of the skinny jeans, or you put up a picture of what you used to look like when you were 20 pounds lighter, or whatever the thing is, that picture, that visual is going to be remembered. You know, neurologically, we remember these things like 6 times more than we do 20 pounds or 10 pounds or whatever the number is. And this is the thing, the more we tap into the basic structure of the brain, you know, visuals speak to people. You know, the old, the picture's worth 1,000 words thing, that's kind of more or less true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that people don't take enough time to do, is really think about that goal. I look at the climate debate. We make a joke of this in the book, but it's really not a joke. So when you look at the climate change debate, why do people have difficulty, the people who are, you know, sort of accept the issue of global warming, why do they struggle so much fighting with the global warming denier types? And it is that they're losing the visual battle. They haven't sat down and said, you know, we're talking about numbers, we're talking about how many feet per year we lose of polar ice and all the rest. But they don't win the visual battle. And you can see this play out in political debates. Whoever wins the optics, whoever wins the visuals, generally wins the debate. Same thing with the goals. If you have a picture of what you look like in those skinny jeans, or even what the skinny jeans look like, it is a lot harder to get rid of that image than it is to set aside the 10-pound thing.
What about staying focused on the goal and not deviating and not procrastinating?
One of the things we've got to grapple with is that we have to have some kind of urgency for the goal. There are plenty of good goals out there that we might care about, we might enjoy, and yet as soon as we start to say, yeah, I'll start that tomorrow, I'll get to that another time, as soon as we head down that path, all of a sudden, the wheels start to come off on these things, and that becomes a major problem. So one of the things that people can really do is several, but one is they can start to make their goals a little more present-oriented. So reward ourselves. You know, it's okay to say we're going to get some benefits from this goal now. Too many goals are of the form you pay now and you get later. I will sacrifice and starve myself for 6 months, and then 6 months from now I'll fit into those skinny jeans. And people look and they say, well, you know, geez, that's a long time, and 6 months is a long way away, and I, you know, mentally I'm not even there. That's an eternity. And so we can start to say, well, you know, I could start to give myself some benefits now. Not that if I go have a good day, I'm going to turn around and eat the chocolate cake. Our rewards have to be congruous with what our goal is. But we can start to mentally reinforce ourselves. We can also turn around and say every single day, what is it I need to do today to keep myself on track to accomplishing this bigger goal? One of the easiest techniques we teach is take that big goal, that 6 month or that 12-month goal, break it in half, and then break it in half again. So let's say you have a 6 month goal. We ask ourselves a question, okay, what does the end look like? What do we look like at 6 months from now? Cut that in half. All right, what do I need to have accomplished at the end of 3 months in order to be on track to achieve my 6 month goal? Break that in half again. What do I need to have achieved at the end of this month in order to be on track for my 3 month goal, in order to be on track for my 6 month goal? Once you've done that, now all of a sudden it's present day. This is a little more here and now. And then the big question, one of the major characteristics that separated people, the high-achieving goal people, from the people that were struggling, the 85% of folks that abandoned their New Year's resolutions, for example, was they asked themselves, okay, given what I need to do this month, for example, what do I need to accomplish today? What's the one thing I need to do today in order to be on track for my month goal, for my 3 month, for the 6 month, et cetera? It's not that I need to lose 20 pounds today. What I need to do today is I need to reduce my caloric intake by 300 calories, whatever the thing is. I need to go for a 3 mile run. I need to network with two old colleagues. Whatever the thing is, you can generally boil most goals down to one or two things a day. It doesn't have to be 80 things in a day. These giant to-do lists we have, it's insanity. We never get anything done. Everybody leaves the office at the end of the day saying, you know, I ran around like a crazy person, but did I actually accomplish anything today? Right. We got to get rid of that sensation. We need to accomplish one thing today that is going to keep us on track for our goals. You do that, and that was one of the major linchpins. Gives you the urgency, makes you start, and keeps you on track.
And then, of course, the other thing, bringing us back around to where we started, is that these need to be things that are difficult, things that really are meaningful.
You know, it's funny. The sports psychologists really did a tremendous amount of work on this, and several decades ago. You know, we've all heard people talk about sports teams and, you know, football season right now. They say, you know, well, so-and-so, they play down to the level of their opponents. And when people started figuring, you know, yeah, why is it that these amazing teams, when they're not facing tough competition, they dial their game back? Well, it's because most people will aim for the path of least resistance. It's just sort of a natural, you know, water flows downhill kind of thing. It's sort of the laws of physics. And what we've got to do with our goals is we've actually got to put ourselves in a psychologically more awake state. And so when we drive into work in the morning, most of us are in a, you know, moderate trance-like state. This isn't challenging us in any particular way. We've driven the route 1,000 times before. We know where we're going. We're not fully engaged. But you set a goal that's just outside of your comfort zone. You take a different route. You turn off the GPS. We don't know where we're going. All of a sudden now, senses get a little bit heightened. Our brain starts to wake up. Neurologically, we are firing with many more neurons than we were 15 minutes ago or the route we took yesterday. And that was the thing that people started to discover with difficult goals, was that it turns out the more difficult the goal, the more it wakes us up, the more it forces us to live up to our absolute potential. We can't sleepwalk. We can't take the easy way out. We all of a sudden perk up, and this is sort of that, you know, Michael Jordan, it's, okay, I'm not awake until the game's close. Oh, now the game's close. Oh, now we got 2 minutes left. Now every neuron is there, activated. I am paying attention. I'm a little outside my comfort zone. It's a little scary. That's okay, because I am absolutely on pins and needles paying attention to this. And over again, when people performed in that zone, some psychologists call it flow, some just call it difficult goals, whatever you want to call it, the state of peak performance, whatever label you want to ascribe to it, it all boils down to the same thing. We need the brain awake, and if your goal is not hard enough, if you're looking at your goal and you're saying, you know what, I'm not really going to learn anything from this goal, make it 30% harder. If you're looking at your goal and saying, you know, I could get through this, this is no big deal, make it 20% harder. Increase the difficulty of the goal until you are just outside your comfort zone, until you have to learn something. If you're not learning anything with your new goal, even with a diet, we got to learn something about, I don't know, our blood chemistry. We have to learn about how we respond to certain situations, what our particular kind of metabolism is. We have to learn something, because that awakens the brain and cast a little doubt, make it just a little bit harder than you're naturally comfortable with. And that's where we start to light up and get excited.
And how does success or failure enter into the equation then?
You know, it's interesting. It's one of the things that emerges, one of the underlying reasons that people set achievable goals in the first place. You know, we want to make sure that everybody gets a trophy. We don't want to have winners and losers and all the rest. And what we discovered is, and again, we came at this just as scientists, looking at this, looking at people who were doing an amazing job of hitting their goals. Well, what happens when people fail at their goals? Are they crushed? And it turns out, not only are they not crushed, they almost always get really close. Hey, listen, sometimes you're going to fall a little bit short. That is just the way it is. But it doesn't break them. In fact, it strengthens them. It increases their taste for it. They need it all the more. The problem comes in when people actually hit too many of their goals, when everything gets too easy and they just roll out of bed. No, there's another goal, there's another one. Then they start to feel empty. What we found is that if you take a look at the, I don't know, Bill Gates type, for example, generally people who set these giant goals, they don't hit every one. They get their dings. They have their bruises to show for it. But they never lose that fire, because they're setting goals that are always half a step beyond where they're comfortable. So even when they fall short, they've learned something, they've grown, they've toughened themselves up, and it's kind of titillating now. Now it's like, I didn't get it. I've got to get it. In fact, I can't stop until I do get it. And so it's been the exact opposite. And, of course, this is, you know, very counter to what we're doing with our kids today. It's, you know, very counter to the everybody gets a trophy thing. And yet what you see is that this is success. The people who really achieve it, they're always pushing. And if they fail, that's okay, because they always have the opportunity to get right back up and continue pursuing it.
What are you seeing in the work that you do with respect to how this is playing out in corporate America today?
I'll give you an example. Steve Jobs has famously said, "We are here to make a dent in the universe." Jeff Bezos at Amazon has said, "People think that you can take your skills and just do what you're already good at and find different markets for that. We're going to go in the opposite direction. We're going to stay in the same market but force ourselves to learn new things because that's the only way we grow and develop." He famously said that when everybody thought he was insane for starting the Kindle. They said, "You're a software company. You don't know from hardware. You got to be out of your mind." He said, "I don't care. It's hard. We have to do it. This is where we grow." When you look at companies that are game-changing kinds of companies, at the head of every one of those companies is a hard goal setter. It is somebody who says, "Of course it's hard. Are you kidding me? It's the only things worth doing in life are hard to do. Of course, we're emotionally connected. We can visualize it." These are all very visual people, too. They build a sense of urgency, and they're always stepping on one step outside of their comfort zone. Every game-changing organization sets goals that way. Does that mean that every organization sets goals that way? Nuh-uh, of course not. And that's why these folks have competitors to go crush. It's because they have people who are sitting around saying, we got to make it achievable, baby steps, make it realistic, don't go out of the comfort zone, do what we're already good at, play to our strengths. Well, these folks are saying, you know what, it doesn't matter if we hit it, don't hit it, because it pushes us, it helps us grow, and that's where we get these quantum leaps. So it's there's always, in every industry, there's an organization that is willing to push it. There are always, and there are always those that don't, always those that hang back. And, it's interesting. You can take any of the car industry, for example. You know, you can see the ones that were willing to push it to step outside of the comfort zone. That's why we have hybrids. And then you have others that are in bankruptcy. And, that is the gap right now. And I suspect we'll always see some difference between those with the guts to do it and those that are going to sit back and get crushed.
Mark Murphy. The book is Hard Goals, The Science of Extraordinary Achievement. It's just out from McGraw-Hill Press. Mark, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Jeff, it was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.